Now it's time for Power of Prophecy, continuing the legacy of Tex Mars, exposing evil, and promoting Jesus Christ as Savior. Here's your host, Jerry Barrett.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. I'm your host, Jerry Barrett, honored to have you join me again this week. This week's topic, well, came out of left field because I was scrolling through a bunch of news feeds on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, and I came across a very interesting post by a gentleman by the name of Michael Schellenberger, and it got me to thinking. Now, we've covered global warming and the hoax that it is and the push for electric vehicles and everything that the Biden regime has pushed as far as renewable energy. Well, I don't know how they can justify the term renewable energy because there is so much destruction that comes about to create just a smidge of what they use to harness so-called renewable energy. And Mr. Schellenberger had a very interesting comment, and I want to play right here at the beginning. The program is going to be entitled, Is Renewable Energy Saving or Killing the Planet? And Mr. Schellenberger is very poignant in this comment.
In the effort to try to save the climate, now that we know that renewables can't save the planet, are we going to keep letting them destroy it?
They are destroying the planet in this quest for so-called renewable energy. So I got to thinking, because I know that petroleum and natural gas are used to create plastics and synthetics, things that we use in our everyday life. Don't even think about it. But we use them every day. Do you have any Tupperware in your cabinet, in your cupboard, in your fridge? Those are made from petroleum products. Are you wearing one of those severe cold shirts by Under Armour? That's a synthetic material. It's amazing. So I wanted to know, and I know, you know, I spent 6 years building high performance engines for race cars and drag boats and things of that nature. So I've had quite a storied various careers throughout my lifetime. But having spent 6 years in the automotive industry, I know that there are a lot of products now on vehicles that are there for weight reduction, whether it's carbon fiber or plain old plastics that reduce the weight of an all-steel vehicle, maybe not beneficial to the health and welfare of those involved in wrecks, but it reduces the weight, makes the vehicle more fuel efficient. So I got online and I started digging and I wanted to know how much petroleum product is put into an EV, an electric vehicle. And I came across an interesting graphic. I had to break it down in about 6 pages because it was very long. But the first thing it states is 1.2 gallons of gasoline is what the average American uses every day. 1.2 gallons. But there's more to oil than just gasoline. Oil with natural gas has hundreds of different uses in the modern vehicle, even in electric vehicles, through petrochemicals. So, the next frame, it says, it turns out many everyday materials we rely on all come from petrochemicals. The 6 key petrochemicals that we use include ethylene, propylene, butylene, benzene, toluene, and xylene. They're flame retardant, durable, Plastics are easy to shape. It's inexpensive. It's lightweight. And these are some of the advantages to using them on your car. Plus, it reduces the overall price of the vehicle. Because if it's molded plastic and it's not having to be machined out of a sheet of metal or steel or aluminum, then it's cheaper. According to this report, plastics make up nearly 50% of a vehicle's volume today, but only 10% of the weight. These plastics can be as strong as steel, but light enough to save on fuel and still retain their structural integrity. But plastics, like polypropylene and polyurethane, weren't always central to car designs. Over time, they have become irreplaceable. In 1916, Rolls-Royce boasted about the use of phenyl formaldehyde resin in its car's interiors. In 1941, Henry Ford experimented by using plastic on steel framework. The car weighed 2,000 pounds, but it was still lighter than a steel car by 1,000 pounds. So instead of 3,000, it was 2,000. In 1960, about 20 pounds of plastic were used on the average car. In 1970, manufacturers started using plastic for the interior decorations. In 1980, your headlights, bumpers, fenders, and tailgates became plastic. In 2000, engineered polymers started appearing in semi-structural parts of the vehicle. Today, the average car uses over 1,000 plastic parts that weigh about 340 pounds. It's the use of these petrochemicals that help make vehicles lighter and more fuel efficient. According to this study, for every 10% of vehicle weight reduction, the fuel economy of a car improves 5 to 7%. Interesting. Less weight, less mass you have to move, of course it's going to get better gas mileage. Electric vehicles rely on battery power rather than gas, but it comes at a heavy price. Most battery packs weigh over 1,000 pounds, which is one of the reasons that roadways are getting destroyed faster is because of the weight of these vehicles. So, a Toyota 4Runner SUV, big old SUV, weighs a little more than 4,200 pounds. The Tesla Model X electric vehicle weighs almost 5,400 pounds. That's 1,200 pounds more than a Toyota 4Runner. But if you look, it's got a breakdown on the anatomy of an EV. It says plastics and polymers are used for hundreds of individual parts in an EV. These are just some of them. Mirrors, headlights, taillights, door interior, handles, the tires, windows, car seat, drivetrain, component housing, battery structure, the battery pack itself, and on the interior, belts are made of plastics and polymers, the seat covers, the dash, the vents, the interior mirror, cup holders, the interior frame, the steering wheel. These are all made of plastic on an EV. So Biden pushing these EVs is kind of oxymoronic, is it not? If the goal is to do away with so-called fossil fuels, then why are we utilizing so much petrochemical components in an EV? It's talking out of both sides of your mouth, and neither side is making sense, is it? Petrochemicals play a critical role in reducing the weight of EVs, which helps increase their range. According to the IHS Chemical, by 2020, the average car will use 772 pounds of plastic. Almost 1,000 pounds in plastic just to create a car, whether it's an EV or a gasoline or diesel-powered vehicle. Now, I know the old V8 engines from the 50s and 60s, they were not very fuel efficient, but they didn't have to be when gas was 34 cents a gallon. They just wanted them to run to get from point A to point B, some a little faster than others. And having spent my time in the high-performance industry, I know that basically an engine, an internal combustion engine, is an air pump. It explodes, but it's an air pump. So the more air you can get in and the more air you can evacuate, the more efficient the vehicle. And I can tell you, I spent a lot of time massaging cylinder heads called porting and polishing and putting them on a flow bench to measure the volume in and the volume out to make these engines that we built as efficient and high performance as we possibly could. And the automotive industry has, in the internal combustion engine, has gotten better at making things more fuel efficient. If you think about a 1956 Corvette and compare it to a Honda of today, the Honda's got four cylinders, and it'll go as fast or faster than that Corvette. Why? Because now they understand the amount of air that they need to get in, the amount of air they need to get out. They've fine-tuned things with electronic fuel injection, things of this nature, that make it more efficient than they were back in the 50s and 60s. And that's called progress. Could they make them even more efficient? Of course they could. And they had to. You remember the oil embargo in the 70s? I was a teen, but I remember it. Because gas went from, I think when Dad was working at the gas station, it was 54 cents a gallon. He pumped gas back then when he was off hours from working in the Air Force. He went to a gas station there by the base, and he pumped gas for a little while. And so it went from 50-something cents a gallon up to over a dollar. And whoo, and there were gas lines, and people were going bonkers having to pay this much for gas. That's when Detroit decided we need to do something about this. We need to partner with some of these Japanese car manufacturers to make our engines more efficient and quit building these gas guzzlers and start building economic vehicles. And lo and behold, that's where Honda and Toyota and Nissan or Datsun, whatever you want to call it, came to be. Mitsubishi, they got a foothold into the American market. They swapped engines and design aesthetics. So the designers from Detroit went to Japan and worked with their designers to create good-looking vehicles that Americans would buy. And the engineers that created the engines in Japan came over and helped Chrysler and Ford to develop more fuel-efficient engines. So there is progress, and there has been a lot of progress. But now that the environmental wackos have a bully pulpit with the senile Biden sitting off in the White House, they're pushing this green agenda. And it doesn't help that you got Soros lackeys like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Lurch, John Kerry, flying around on his private jet, going around telling people that we need to do away with fossil fuels. Well, a funny thing happened this past week. Tucker Carlson on Twitter or X had a gentleman on. His name is Dr. Willie Soon. And I didn't know this. I haven't listened to the whole show, but I listened long enough, they have found hydrocarbons on a moon, I think on Jupiter. So does that mean the moon at Jupiter had dinosaurs on it? And there was a Big Bang or some kind of meteor that hit it and killed everything? And then thousands of years later, the carcasses that rotted from the dinosaurs created this hydrocarbon? No. So the myth of a fossil fuel is just that. It has been exposed by Dr. Soon that it is a hoax. It is a hydrocarbon and not fossil fuels. Now, again, I go back to Michael Schellenberger. He had a TED Talk, and he talked about renewables and can they save the planet? And this is about 3.5 minutes long, but it was so information-packed and poignant, I cut it down from a 30-minute talk to just 3.5 minutes. I want you to hear what he has to say about renewables and saving the planet.
Shortly after I turned 30, I decided I wanted to dedicate a significant amount of my life to solving climate change. I was worried that global warming would end up destroying many of the natural environments that people had worked so hard to protect. I thought the technical solutions were pretty straightforward. Solar panels on every roof, electric car in the driveway, that the main obstacles were political. Our proposal was for a $300 billion investment in renewables. And the idea was not only would we prevent climate change, but we would also create millions of new jobs in a very fast-growing high-tech sector. Our efforts really paid off in 2007, when then-presidential candidate Barack Obama embraced our vision. And between 2009 and 2015, the U.S. invested $150 billion in renewables and other kinds of clean tech. But right away, we started to encounter some problems. So first of all, the electricity from solar rooftops ends up costing about twice as much as the electricity from solar farms. And both solar farms and wind farms require covering a pretty significant amount of land with solar panels and wind turbines, and also building very big transmission lines to bring all that electricity from the countryside into the city. Both of those things were often very strongly resisted by local communities, as well as by conservation biologists who were concerned about the impacts on wild bird species and other animals. One of the big challenges, of course, is just the intermittency of solar and wind. They only generate electricity about 10 to 30% of the time during most of the year. In terms of wildlife, some of these problems just didn't seem like a significant concern. So when I learned that house cats kill billions of birds every year, it put into perspective the hundreds of thousands of birds rather that are killed by wind turbines. Cats don't kill eagles. Eagles kill cats. What cats kill are the small common sparrows and jays and robins, birds that are not endangered and not at risk of going extinct. What do kill eagles and other big birds, as well as owls and condors and other threatened and endangered species, are wind turbines. In fact, they're one of the most significant threats to those big bird species that we have. And in terms of solar, you know, building a solar farm is a lot like building any other kind of farm. You have to clear the whole area of wildlife. One of the biggest solar farms in California called Ivanpah, in order to build this, they had to clear the whole area of desert tortoises, literally pulling desert tortoises and their babies out of burrows, putting them on the back of pickup trucks and transporting them to captivity, where many of them ended up dying. And currently, the current estimates are that about 6,000 birds are killed every year, actually catching on fire above the solar farm and plunging to their deaths. Over time, it gradually struck me that there was really no amount of technological innovation that was going to make the sun shine more regularly or wind blow more reliably. Sunlight and wind are just really dilute fuels, and in order to produce significant amounts of electricity, you just have to cover a very large landmass with them. All of the major problems with renewables aren't technical, they're natural. I mentioned earlier that hundreds of thousands of birds are killed every year by wind turbines. What I didn't mention is that 1 million bats at a minimum are killed every year by wind. The consequence has been that bat scientists have been speaking out about this. This particular bat species, the hoary bat, which is a migratory bat species, is literally at risk of going extinct right now because of the significant expansion of wind.
Now, this is an interesting TED Talk, and you can find it by searching for Michael Schellenberger, Schellenberger. Obviously, he was a tree hugger. He's from California, but he has seen the truth behind these so-called renewable energy options. And it's quite an amazing TED Talk. He actually goes on and he promotes the building of nuclear energy structures, which honestly is probably the best form of electricity for our nation without polluting our nation. So he's got an article that he put together in Forbes. This is from May 17th of 2018. If renewables are so great for the environment, why do they keep destroying it? And he says, if solar and wind farms are needed to protect the natural environment, why do they destroy it? Number one, offshore wind turbines in Germany could lead to the extinction of individual species, including the rare, intelligent, and highly threatened harbor porpoise, the migratory bat populations, like the hoary bat, could go completely extinct because of wind turbines. Ivanpah, he mentioned Ivanpah. It's Ivanpah. It's a solar farm in California. They had to round up hundreds of desert tortoises, a reptile, the state's threatened reptile, to put in this solar farm. And this solar farm kills 6,000 birds by lighting them on fire. Can you imagine? Never even would have thought of that. The wind turbines in California's Altamont Pass kill an estimated 4,700 birds, including golden eagles. Some lose their wings, some are decapitated, and others are cut in half. So, 16,200 to 59,400 birds are killed annually by solar farms in Southern California, and 140,000 to 328,000 birds are killed by wind turbines annually just in the United States. He points out that large birds of prey like raptors are slower to reproduce, and so death of breeding adults has a far more devastating impact on their population than the deaths of the small birds that the cats kill. But he goes on to ask the question, aren't such environmental impacts common to all forms of energy production? They are not. Because water, sunlight, and wind are energy dilute, renewable technologies require orders of magnitude more land and materials to produce the same amount of energy as non-renewables. The solar farm, Ivanpah, requires 450 times more land per unit of energy produced than the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant. And the naysayers and doom and gloomers about nuclear energy claimed that there was going to be so much damage from the nuclear water that came out from the reactor. Well, there has been no impact on neighborhood fishing. Solar and wind constitute just 1.3 to 6.3% of the electricity in the United States. 1.3 and 3.9% of electricity globally. But these renewable advocates would like to see this somewhere between 30 and 100% for our electricity supply. What do you think the impacts on wildlife will be if this is expanded 20-fold for solar and wind? Mr. Schellenberger says, consider this. 95 wind farms the size of Alta Wind Energy Center, the largest in the U.S. and the second largest in the world, would produce one quarter of California's power. 93 solar farms the size of Ivanpah, which killed 6,000 birds annually and has killed hundreds of desert tortoises to date, would generate a quarter of the state's power. These are massive undertakings that these renewable energy zealots are pushing for. And they don't care about the environment because they're destroying it to put in these solar panels. And if they kill birds, so be it. If they kill birds with the wind turbines, so be it. But they have to put these solar panels and turbines, wind turbines, in desolate areas because, well, not in my backyard, right, NIMBY. You know, Nancy Pelosi doesn't want a great big wind turbine in her backyard. So they put it off somewhere, and then how much energy is lost transporting it from the wind turbine through the power lines to a station where it can store it? If you've ever used an extension cord and you've put three or four together to get out a couple hundred feet and your power saw doesn't work, it's because it doesn't have enough juice. It hasn't got enough wire. It dissipates as it goes out that length of extension cord. Same thing happens with solar and wind. But the impact that it is having on animal species, and I'm not a tree hugger, but we are supposed to be good stewards with what God has blessed us with. You don't get mad at your cat and kick it. No. So why would you think it's okay to go out and torch a bird because of your solar panels? Or chop a bird in half with your wind turbines because you need electricity? It doesn't work that way. We're supposed to be good stewards. But these zealots that are enviral wackos is what Tex called them, they could care less. It's all part of their progress. For animals to maintain their population size, they need habitat. They need the ability to move around without being killed. But these wind turbine developers are resisting every effort to change where they site these turbines. I've talked about them having to turn them off during migration periods out in California because they're killing birds. If they're not turned on, they're not making any electricity. But thankfully, Mr. Schellenberger points out that wildlife biologists, conservationists, and birders are speaking up about these renewable energy projects. In 2013, federal wildlife officials took the unprecedented step of telling private companies they would not be prosecuted for inadvertently harassing or even killing endangered California condors, even though it's a violation of federal law. Unbelievable. They're giving them permission. It's just like the vaccines, right? The government has given a clean hand to the vaccine manufacturers, Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson. We found this out especially during the Rona. They created these mRNA jabs. I'm not going to call it a vaccine. These jabs, but they were given out under the emergency use authorization, which prevented these jab manufacturers, Big Pharma, from being prosecuted for people dying or having strokes or heart attacks or any other adverse event. That's the same thing that they have been doing with these wind turbines and solar panels. And it's not just in America. It's around the globe. And I got a whole lot more to touch on when we come back. This kind of got in a rabbit hole on this one. This is intense, and I hope you'll hang in there with me. I appreciate you sharing some of your time with me. We're going to take a brief pause, and when I come back, we're going to dive right back in. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Stay with us, won't you? We'll be right back. Hello, friends. Jerry Barrett back with you again. I want to tell you about an outstanding video documentary that Tex did many years ago, but it's still poignant today. It's entitled The Green Barbarians, The Environmentalist Plot to Destroy the Earth and Launch a New Age Holocaust. For years, they claimed to love Mother Earth and wanted only to protect her, but they lied. Tex Mars fully reveals their monstrous hidden agenda. He documents their plans to blow up dams, bulldoze and graze over roads, savagely cut down millions of trees, kill off countless millions of birds and animals, and obliterate tens of millions of acres of green vegetation and plant life. Worse, however, is the fanatical environmentalist barbaric design against human life. They fanatically are plotting a Holocaust and genocide that would result in the slaying and massacre of nearly 6 billion innocent men, women, and children. The crimes of Stalin and Hitler are minuscule compared to the bloody carnage for which the environmentalists lust. If they succeed, the environmentalists will have become the greatest destroyers in all history. No wonder that Revelation 11:18 declares God's wrath against destructive environmentalist renegades and reveals his intent to destroy them which destroy the earth. 60-minute documentary DVD. We're only asking $20. Please add $6 shipping and handling to get your copy of Green Barbarians. You can order a copy by phoning us toll-free in the United States and Canada at 1-800-234-9673. Again, that's 1-800-234-9673. If you care to phone us on our regular line, that number is 512-263-9780. We're in the office Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Time. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. If you want to order your copy online, just go to powerofprophecy.com, our secure shopping cart right there at powerofprophecy.com. There's an ad for Green Barbarians right there on the main page. Click on it. Put in your name, address, charge card, shipping method, hit submit, we'll get it, and we will get this coming to you usually by the next business day. You can use those charge cards and fax in your order. If you want to fax it in, just write down your name, your address, the charge card, and the expiration date, and if you can, the three-digit code, and fax it to us at 512-263-9793. Now, if you want to send in a check, money order, or cash, please make your check or money order payable to Power of Prophecy, and you can mail it to us here at 4819 R.O. Drive, Suite 102, Spicewood, Texas, and our zip code is 78669. $26 postpaid for the Green Barbarians. If you don't have a copy, you need to get one now. Okay, now let's return to our regular program. Today we're discussing, is renewable energy saving or killing the planet?
In the effort to try to save the climate, now that we know that renewables can't save the planet, are we going to keep letting them destroy it?
Now, Friends of the Earth in Germany said, quote, offshore wind turbines in Germany could be grave and even lead to the extinction of individual species, like the harbor porpoise. Can you imagine one of these enviro wackos, the same people that fought hydroelectric dams, nuclear power plants, coal-fired power plants, that they would actually go out on a limb and say it's okay for the extinction of a whale because of a big energy project? That's how warped these minds are. They are enviro-wackos. But it's not just Friends of the Earth. It's Greenpeace. It's the Sierra Club. There's others that have hyped fears of the slightly warm, clean water that exit nuclear plants, harming local aquatic life. But today, they are actively justifying wind and solar deaths because, well, there could be future bird deaths because of climate change. Or the house cat is killing millions of birds. The hypocrisy, the double-mindedness is immense with these people because they've all bought into the hoax of climate change. You know, the Bible says that we're going to have climate change. We're going to have seasons until he returns. But these people don't read the Bible. Their Bible is Mother Earth. That's their God. Their God is the wind and the sun. They've gone pagan. And it's okay if we kill some of God's creatures because we got to protect the planet. Oh, my. Do you remember the British Petroleum spill in 2010? 800,000 birds died. There was a $100 million fine against BP. The avian death toll is slightly more than half of the 1.4 million bird deaths that the American Bird Conservancy warns wind turbines will create every year during normal operation by 2030 in the U.S. alone. So how do you understand the double standard from these so-called environmentalists? It doesn't compute, does it? But California continues to move forward with closing their last nuclear plant in Diablo Canyon. They want to replace it with natural gas and electricity from solar and wind farms. And Californians keep voting for this. But if you've watched the news, you've seen in the last year or two the number of whales that have died and washed up on shore in New Jersey, New York, along the northeastern seaboard. Michael Schellenberger talked about the documentary Thrown to the Wind. There was one released, I believe, last year. There is a new one come out this year called Part 2, and it gives hard evidence that the wind industry is killing whales. So I want you to hear Michael Schellenberger talking about the whale killing being done by the wind industry.
The first commercial-scale offshore wind project in the nation is on Long Island.
More are planned along the East Coast.
It's the first in New York State, but the first of what will be thousands. It will eventually power half of Long Island.
Wind farms are still on the table even after the cancellation of two major offshore wind projects.
Vineyard Wind is building the nation's biggest commercial offshore wind project, 15 miles south of Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard.
Another huge wind farm off Martha's Vineyard is expected to start delivering power early next year.
So we had a big victory a few weeks ago when Ørsted decided to pull out of the wind industry project they were building off the coast of New Jersey. So you might think we're out of the woods, but we know that this really is never over. There's actually a number of other wind industry projects that are planned for the East Coast, and even the one in New Jersey, they're never going to give up on it. They're going to keep trying for it. We know it was pretty game-changing to have that sonar mapping of the ocean floor. Rob Rand has continued to do his investigations. We now think that there's going to be hearings. They've been planned for this year, postponed for next year. I mean, I've never seen anything like this. I mean, the federal agencies that are supposed to be protecting the whales are completely corrupted. They've sold out to push the wind industry agenda. The media has been horrible. We know that most of the news media have taken big money from Ørsted and the wind industry. We know the politicians have been paid off. Even the aquariums, even the guys that do the autopsies on the whales are funded by the wind industry. So we just got to get the science in front of everybody. It's really been about, you know, the public engagement on this.
So the wind industry is paying for the autopsies. There's no conflict of interest there. Nothing to see. Nothing to see. So on Michael's X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, he had a very detailed posting about the killing of the whales. And I have to share this with you. Before 2016, 8 humpback whales were found dead per year between Virginia and Maine. 8. Since 2016, an average of 25 humpback whales are found dead annually. Last year, in 2023, there were a record 83 whales found dead. But the Associated Press insists there's no evidence that wind farm construction on the Atlantic coast has directly resulted in any whale deaths. Okay, that's true. There's no evidence. But there's also no evidence that smoking directly causes cancer, is there? The Associated Press is deliberately misleading people. The U.S. government and the media are blaming the spike in whale deaths on, you guessed it, climate change. But last year, the most thorough investigation to date of whale deaths found a strong correlation with wind industry activity. Lisa Linows, Linows, of Save the Right Whales Coalition did the study. Lisa tracked whale deaths within the same time frame and location as offshore wind sonar surveys. Quote, as the amount of offshore wind activity increased within an area, so did whale deaths. So there was Thrown to the Wind documentary. There was Thrown to the Wind Part 2. They document by measuring illegal levels of noise from pile driving by the wind industry off Martha's Vineyard. The boat crew heard the noise through the air. Environmental groups and Democratic governors are championing the illegal pile driving off the East Coast. These are the same people that fought drilling for oil in the same area just a few years ago because they claimed it would be too noisy. It is illegal to harm or kill endangered species. The North Atlantic right whale is critically endangered with fewer than 400 individuals in the species left. But, as Michael stated in the clip I played, they've been paid off. Politicians, news media, they have been paid off to support the continuation of pile-driving pylons into the ocean floor, high levels of sonar activity to find places to pound these pylons into the Earth's crust in the ocean floor to put these wind turbines up. It is a huge scandal, but nobody cares. They're spending billions from the wind industry and using taxpayer dollars to corrupt politicians, regulatory agencies. The news media is being paid off with donations and advertisement dollars. It's crazy. But get this. In HeartlandDailyNews.com, January 8th of 24, written by Diana Furchgott Roth, she wrote, when wind turbine companies seek permission to harm sea life, reporters for the Associated Press blame the Heritage Foundation and the Heartland Institute instead of reporting facts. The misleading AP article was carried by WBTS in Boston, The Daily Star in Oneonta, New York, and WTFX in Philadelphia, among others, and it stated, quote, scientists say there is no credible evidence linking offshore wind farms to whale deaths, close quote, and that, quote, offshore wind opponents are using unsupported claims about harm to whales to try to stop projects, with some of the loudest opposition centered in New Jersey, close quote. This article accuses opponents of causing angst in coastal communities where developers need to build shoreside infrastructure to operate a wind farm. Why are offshore wind farm companies asking Uncle Sam for permission to harm ocean mammals? And why are dead whales washing up on East Coast beaches? You heard Michael mention in that audio clip, Orsted dropped out of a wind turbine project there in New Jersey. That was a huge win for those looking to protect the whales. But Atlantic Shores and Ørsted's Ocean Winds requested permission to harm ocean mammals in their applications for New Jersey offshore wind projects. Since May 2022, 31 dead whales have washed up on New Jersey's beaches. Now, Ørsted pulled out, but before that, they requested permission to harm 30 whales, 3,231 dolphins, 82 porpoises, and 8 seals through sound waves generated by its surveys. But the company claimed that the damage would be negligible. Atlantic Shores is owned by Dutch Shell Oil and French EDF, and it's still seeking permission to locate an offshore wind farm in New Jersey. In its request for incidental harassment, it stated that acoustic waves associated with the sighting of the wind turbines would likely affect 10 whales, 662 dolphins, 206 porpoises, and 546 seals. Again, this is a negligible amount, according to this company. It received permission from New Jersey to harm these marine animals. The NOAA website states it's difficult to measure the effect of man-made sounds on mammals. Quote, acoustic trauma, which could result from close exposure to loud human-produced sounds, is very challenging to assess, particularly with any amount of decomposition or damage to the whale's body. But the AP article had no mention about the New Jersey offshore wind farms having practically no effect on mitigating global temperatures by 2100. The year 2100. They're not proving that there is going to help global warming, climate change whatsoever. Now, local municipalities are continuing to reject wind farms. This is according to Renewable Rejections Database Tracker, and it's maintained by scholar Robert Bryce. He reports 417 wind farms and 190 solar arrays have been rejected by local communities in 2023. Good for them. Reject it. It's a detriment to your environment. But there is a huge war on big oil. And you know, one of the people that's behind the war on big oil is Michael Bloomberg. David Blackman writes for the Daily Caller, and he talked about getting a message, an email, in his inbox, inviting Society of Environmental Journalists, or SEJ, Society of Environmental Journalists, well, there's an oxymoron, journalists, offering them the opportunity to spend 3 glorious days in Port Arthur, Texas. Have you ever been to Port Arthur, Texas? Probably not. It's not a mecca for tourism, but it is a hub for refining oil, making plastics and petrochemicals, and that is why the Society of Environmental Journalists were invited to stay in Port Arthur for a conference, and it's coming up January 24th through 26th. It is funded by Michael Bloomberg's group Beyond Plastics. The invitation says, quote, there is no registration fee. We will provide lodging and meals free of charge. However, you will be responsible for making and paying for your own travel arrangements to and from Houston. Now, they are going to have a bus that these journalists can ride all the way over to Port Arthur from Houston and have this conference to bash on big oil. And that's what these billionaires are doing. That's how they're getting this renewable energy push for whatever reason they think it's going to save global warming if we're not using petrochemicals. Although I talked about at the beginning of the program how much we use petrochemicals and oil products, petroleum derivatives, in our everyday life. Are we going to run around in burlap sacks? I can't imagine Chanel or Dior or Oscar de la Renta putting together outstanding fashion with burlap sacks. I don't see it. But Bloomberg funnels this money through Beyond Plastics via a complex network of environmental activists and dark money organizations, and their number one goal is to get these journalists to write stories that these billionaires and their groups want to see. There will be little to no coverage of the conflict of interest in how this event is being organized and funded. This year's Confab is stacked with presentations from various anti-fossil fuel advocates, including Dr. Robert Bullard, an urban planning and environmental policy professor known as the father of environmental justice, and Jen Powis, managing attorney for the Gulf at Earth Justice. The objective is obvious: to promote national media stories that are negative about petrochemicals and plastics and will serve as a germination point for future litigation. We don't care how much we depend on petrochemicals, do we? No. Out of sight, out of mind comes to the fore, does it not? You know, nobody pays attention to what their Tupperware is made out of, or their Mr. Coffee, or their air fryer, or their battery, or their bumper, at least until they come into a wreck. Then all of a sudden, it's a big deal. Now I know it's made out of plastic, which comes from a petroleum derivative. Global efforts to fight climate change are also driving up the demand for lithium, cobalt, graphite, and other such minerals that are essential in building electric vehicles, solar panels, and other so-called clean technology. And with the demand from the Biden administration, from Newsom, from all of these other enviro wackos to make EVs, the demand for these minerals are going to be even higher because they need it to make batteries. But there is also cause and effect, comes right back into this. There is a potential to sap water supplies. That's right. According to data from the U.S. Geological Survey, at least 16% of the world's land-based critical mineral mines, deposits, and districts are located in areas already facing high or extremely high levels of water stress. These are areas where agriculture, industry, and households regularly use up much or most of the available water supply. Most methods used to mine critical minerals today require significant amounts of water for separating the minerals, cooling the machinery, and controlling dust. Waste from mining and processing also contaminate water in nearby communities. The current process for extracting lithium is water intensive. The miners pump this brine water into large pools on the surface of the flats, where the water evaporates out and leaves behind lithium carbonate used for producing clean energy technologies. This evaporation method uses up to 500,000 gallons of brine water to extract 1 ton of lithium. Some reports show that withdrawing such large quantities can cause fresh water to flow into the brine aquifers and mix with the salt water. This can deplete nearby surface and groundwater supplies. In Chile's Salar de Atacama, lithium and copper extraction have reportedly consumed over 65% of the local water supply, depleting available water for indigenous farming communities in an already water-scarce region. Indigenous communities in Chile and Argentina have also reported contamination of fresh water used for drinking, for livestock, and for agriculture with toxic waste from lithium operations. If we are looking to save the planet, why are we destroying it? It doesn't make any sense. And something else is the amount of coal-fired power plants. Think about it. We're in winter now. This is January of 2024. And we are facing a big Arctic blast here in Texas. It's going to be here next week. And we're going to have temperatures in the teens and 20s. And we don't see that very often. Now, occasionally we have blizzards and ice storms and all the havoc that's created by that. But for the most part, we're in the low upper 20s, low 30s at night, and we get in the 50s during the day down here in central Texas. But there are people that depend on coal for heat. My dad told a story when he came down to San Antonio to go to basic training when he joined the Air Force. He said, I was standing outside my barracks in December in short sleeve shirt. He said, there is no way I'm going back to Ohio and shoveling snow and coal because they had the furnace in the basement that was coal fired to provide heat for the house. Think outside of America, because contrary to what you would think, more people die from cold than they do summer's heat, according to global analysis of fatalities caused by various natural hazards. A 2023 health study conducted across 854 European cities revealed an estimated annual excess of over 203,000 deaths were due to the cold, while just over 20,000 were attributed to the heat. This pseudoscience of climate change is endangering people with these impractical energy policies. Climate science has been co-opted by a worldwide political crusade against human-induced global warming in places like Mongolia, where economic hardship and energy converge. Staying warm is a continual wintertime focus. At minus 35 degrees Fahrenheit, the people of Mongolia are left to fend for themselves. To brave this harsh climate, they rely on just two crucial energy sources: internal electricity generation from their plentiful coal reserves, and the direct use of coal for heating homes. Destitute communities in Afghanistan rely on coal to endure winters. It's easy for these hypocritical politicians who fly to these global climate summits in their private jets, emitting carbon dioxide all over the place, to champion the elimination of so-called fossil fuels. But this activism blatantly ignores the bone-chilling grip of winter on these far-away communities. So it's okay for John Kerry to jet-set all around the globe because his carbon footprint, he's saving the world. He's a liar. He's a hoaxer. Al Gore, a liar and a hoaxer. All of these people claiming global warming. Chicken Little, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. No, it's not. What you are doing is leading this world into total destruction. All in the name of your God of the sun and the wind. Your renewable energy scam is not saving the planet, but it is killing it. I want to thank you for tuning in and giving me an hour of your time. I greatly appreciate it as always, and I pray you will tune in again next week at this same time. Tune in and discover the power of prophecy.